I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonder Root artist feature. I have the pleasure today of speaking with multidisciplinary artist Ashley Anderson. Ashley, how are you doing?
I'm good. I think I didn't sleep enough last night. I was too busy working.
Well, what are you working on these days?
I'm getting some stuff ready for a show at Mint in a few weeks. I'm doing some portraits on 8x8-inch panels. I'm almost done with the first one. It's a portrait of Chelsea Raffalo, who's another really incredible artist here in town. And then I'm also doing a portrait of Nikita Gale and a portrait of Jiha Moon. So I was just working on that a little bit.
So is this an homage to these artists, or is this just an artist that you like, that you respect, or is there some sort of theme that I'm not aware of that's happening as far as the art?
It's just artists I like and I respect.
What about them do you respect?
They're all very hard workers. They're all very thoughtful about their work, and they all generate good work. They're good people, too. I mean, I think I'm developing this policy whenever I do portraits, which is not very often, but I am only really interested in memorializing someone, in something a little longer lasting than the human body, if I think that they're a good person, that they ought to be remembered, which is kind of a hard thing to say. But, that's kind of a criterion. If I don't like the person, I'm not going to draw them.
And you actually know them, which is, I won't say that's rare, but most of the time when people are creating drawings of others, it's usually someone who might be famous who they may not know, but you actually know them, and you may take on or bring out different things in this work because you know them that you may not be able to bring out or express in someone that you may only know from a distance or because of their status in our popular culture.
Yeah. I mean, familiarity definitely puts a different spin on a drawing. I didn't think about this until now, but when I was younger, there was a book of drawings by Toulouse-Lautrec that I was looking through, and I was pretty pleasantly surprised to find this really beautiful pastel drawing of Van Gogh, because apparently Van Gogh and Toulouse-Lautrec had met at some time. And it was so neat to see another artist who I was so familiar with interpreted by this new artist who I was already really fond of. And just imagine like the kind of friendship they might have had. There's like a nice intimacy and a nice sort of intersection of different parts of art history that happens when that happens. That I was pretty pleased by. So a lot of the work that I make in any form is about interacting with art history and kind of mimicking some of the things I see happening in art history, just because it's a ready-made foundation that you can build on. So doing portraits of artists is certainly not without precedent, and it's something I really enjoy conceptually as well as just in terms of the process. Like I'm not really known for doing portraits of people, but I really do enjoy drawing people and rendering a faithful likeness that's still expressive without being photographic. So that's kind of what I'm doing with the show at Mint. It's just sort of showing people this different side of, what I enjoy doing, which is art in general.
One thing that I appreciate about you is that you're one of the few artists that I've talked to who spends a lot of time understanding the materials that they work with and really trying to work through what those materials can do and how you can stretch them or just find different ways to use them. So where did that come from? Because you talk a lot about materials and how to manipulate them and really understand just how you can apply them in different ways.
Well, I'm going to embarrass Jiha Moon at this juncture. I wasn't as active about understanding my materials until I went and saw Jiha Moon's show at Saltworks in 2010. And I was walking around and looking at these paintings, and there were these incredibly fine marks that were completely opaque, but they were obviously made with acrylic, according to the title cards, you know, the list of media and whatnot. And fortunately, Jiha was there, so I asked her what kind of acrylic she was using to make such fine marks, because with regular acrylics, you have to either thin it down with water, which dilutes the color and weakens the paint film, and then you have to do it a million times, which means you don't have that, you know, that first mark. And I was like, how are you doing this with regular acrylics? And she said, well, I'm using fluid acrylics, which are lower viscosity acrylics created by the Golden Acrylic Paint Company. And so it just blew my mind that stuff existed and I didn't know about it. And when I paint, I use acrylics. And I've been getting very frustrated with acrylics because they weren't doing what I was wanting them to do. And when Jiha told me about those, I really thought about it and I realized that acrylics weren't doing what I wanted them to do because I didn't know what they could do. I was too stubborn. I thought I could just do it with water and paint, and that's the worst way to do it with acrylics. So talking to Jiha at her show really kind of, it made me, it increased my resolve to understand materials more. So now, like, whenever I get, for instance, before the Shinobi Maryland show, I was doing these drawings on plastic, and I bought a sheet of Duralar and a sheet of styrene and a sheet of Yupo, which are all plastics, and I took all the materials that I normally work with, and I made marks on each of those sheets of the exact similar quality. And then allowed everything to dry, and then tried scratching it off with my fingernail, tried scratching it off with a razor blade, tried tearing the paper, tried erasing to see, like, you know, what I could erase off. And I still have those sheets, you know, they're just like, they're guides. And again, that comes from Jiha Moon just telling me about those little fluid acrylics, and it just had a wider implication for me.
What does the term art monger mean to you?
One who mongs art. I really just, I don't know. It just seemed like something funny to put on my business card. I didn't realize people would react to it as much as they have. But people love that. I mean, you know, it's just, I just based it on fishmonger. So he... or she, there are, I'm sure there are female fishmongers, sells fish. They don't make fish because that would be weird, but they sell them. So I make and sell art, so I figured I mong art.
In terms of your career up to this point, mm-hmm. in terms of your practice, you work in a lot of different areas. What's been the most challenging aspect of being in this place where you are right now making art?
Oh, geez, that's a good question. The most challenging aspect? Well, I guess this is kind of a good teachable moment. I think I still have difficulty sometimes just getting started. Sometimes it's very strange, and I've had this conversation with tons of other artists, so I'm not the only one having this problem. Sometimes, even though you know what you're doing, you know, is valid, and you know you're doing a good job, more than likely, it can still be very difficult just to get started. You know, you can, I'm sure some folks listening have had this experience. You'll have a list of things that are very important that need to get done, and you know you'll enjoy doing them, but then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I have all these receipts that I need to crumple into little balls and throw in the trash can. And that takes you 2 hours, and it's just this weird way of willfully distracting yourself from what you know you'll enjoy. So that can definitely be a challenge. What else? And there's a weird kind of like complex that I have sometimes where like I'll be in the middle of something, a project or a few projects, and I'll feel like I'm not getting anything done. And then I'll get on Facebook and I'll see other people getting all these great things done. And I will honestly get a little bit jealous. But then I realize that I'm in between moments like that, you know? And that's such a garbage way to feel about what other people are doing, too. I love to listen to audiobooks, among other things, while I'm working. And I was listening to the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis, read by John Cleese, which is like gold. But there's a quote in the Screwtape Letters that has an application whether or not you're really a C.S. Lewis fan or not. I think it has a wider application for everybody. It's something to the effect of, it's about the issue of pride, and he talks about how people have no, it's not really a person's job to have an opinion about their abilities or to be proud of the abilities that they have because they're born with them. And it's almost like someone taking like pride in the color of their hair as if they had anything to do with that. So that's very humbling. And that was a good thing for me to hear, especially the first time I heard it, because I was having those feelings at the time, which are, again, I reiterate, just total garbage. So that can be a challenge sometimes, just monitoring yourself and just keeping aware of where you're at. Yeah.
You are one of the artists who will be creating work for the Wonder Root CSA.
Yeah.
Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any inkling at this early stage about what you'll be creating and how are you approaching the scale of this endeavor?
Okay. Well, I haven't heard back yet about the proposals that I've submitted. They are wide ranging. Some of them are definitely more intense than others. I don't want to put whoever's making those decisions on the spot, but I'll describe some of the proposals I put in. One was I would make some of my guns and knives. I've had this image of a revolver that is a little simpler than the pistols I make, but it's something I've been wanting to make for a while. So that was one thing that I thought I might do. And then this sort of serrated, like Rambo knife thing too. That was one thing. And actually, out of all the proposals, I think that's maybe the most usual out of all of them. One that I'm really interested in is an extension of these collages I did back in 2011. Yeah. Called Memory Beach, and they were these collages that I made on the computer using just graphics that were pulled from video games, but they became this narrative about a heartbroken octopus who goes to the beach to forget about his girlfriend. And it's one of my favorite things I've ever made, and I've been thinking for a little while about making more collages in that series to kind of expand the narrative, but also mess with outsourcing production to different websites to sort of generate objects from that universe, but objects that are actually like usable. So if you can think of the octopus sort of pulling over on his way to the beach, and there's like, you know, this kind of gift shop that he goes into. The main thing that really kind of triggered it was I saw someone come into my day job and they were wearing like a one of those kitschy beach shirts, you know. And I thought, well, what if I did something like that where it's like the silhouette of a palm tree and maybe a line indicating ocean and then a circle for like the setting sun. And instead of like, you know, saying something ridiculous like I got laid in Hawaii, it would be like I forgot at Memory Beach, which is kind of the point of the octopus's journey in that story. So then when the Wonder Root CSA came around, I was like, well, what if I like made part of my production for the CSA sort of a dabbling in that, so that people would get, you know, a t-shirt and maybe like a Frisbee. And I've been looking around on the internet at different things that I could get made. And then aside from these things that, you know, are alienated labor, you know, I design them, but I don't print them and I don't put them together, but I put my name on them. Aside from those things, they would get a finger quotes Polaroid from Memory Beach that would actually be a gel transfer print that I make using those images, with maybe like a wish you were here kind of scrawled on it. So that was another one. And then I'm not guaranteeing that any of these things will happen, but I don't. If anyone out there remembers getting like these books that had a cassette where you could listen as you were reading and it sort of, you know, narrated and did the voices. I had a GoBots book like this when I was a kid. It came with a cassette tape. Sort of making something like that, that I would draw. I would like illustrate this story in this booklet. And then there would be an audio component, but I thought, what if the audio component sort of derailed? And at a certain point, it just devolved into just nonsense. So I thought about doing something like that, maybe with a hidden bonus track of whale song, where it's actually me in some echoey warehouse just making whale noises, just to be, you know, something funny. Because one thing in a broader sense with my artwork that I try to incorporate a lot of the time is humor. I love funny art, even if it's really dry funny art. Like Jasper Johns's the bronze cans that he cast were a complete joke based on something that Willem de Kooning said, but they're really clever. One of my favorite things ever made. So just fooling around, but skillfully.
Very skillfully. Ashley Anderson, as we wrap up, mm-hmm. there's a playful animation edge to a lot of your work, mm-hmm. or a lot of your work maybe pulls from that. So I was wondering if you were a gamer, or did you used to be one when you were a kid, or how does that play into your current way of spending time these days?
This is great. I love it when people ask me this question. Because it really helps me clarify my position. I actually don't play video games. I don't play them very much. I'm pretty bad at video games, really.
So is it the art that you like more about the video games versus the actual gaming part of it?
Well, I mean, I'll still play some games for fun, like... One of the first things I downloaded when I got my smartphone was a Game Boy emulator because I love Tetris. And there's another more obscure puzzle game called Dedalion Opus that is a lot of fun to play. And those are just kind of time killers if I'm in line somewhere, something like that. When I was younger, I definitely played video games a lot. Like, I didn't care about sports. And I remember a lot of Friday nights, you know, we would go to, you know, movie gallery or wherever else in town, and maybe rent like a VHS and then rent a Nintendo game. And then I would just play the game all weekend. And that was good enough for me. But now there's so much other stuff that's more urgent that I enjoy doing more than playing video games. Like I love to read. I love to research stuff. I enjoy drawing, you know, way more than playing video games. I'll still play some games for fun. Like, there's one game that I was just all about back in 2005, 2006 called, I'm going to get the first part of this name wrong, but it's something like Gojuku Parodius. And it's this shooter for the Super Nintendo that only came out in Japan, made by Konami, and it's a parody of Gradius. So it has the same power-up system, and it's the same game mechanics, side-scrolling, space shooter, but you can play as a flying pig, a sunfish, a stick man riding on a paper airplane, a Playboy bunny riding a torpedo, a baby, and your enemies are like penguins and pirate ships with cat heads and a giant battleship covered in Easter Island heads. And it's just this ridiculous game that actually has a lot of art history quotes in it. During the first boss battle, there's a Degas painting hanging in the background of a ballerina, partly because the first boss of the game is a giant panda in a ballerina outfit. So that was a really fun game. And it's a nice model to follow outside of gaming too, because it's these people who are the best at what they do, but having fun with what they do and not taking themselves too seriously, but also having all these really neat little quotations culturally inside of their work. I haven't really played any video games in a little while. My friend Michael Griffin, who is a really awesome writer and co-creator of this animated series, pardon the plug, is a much bigger gamer than I am. And normally we were roommates for a little while, and we would just play the crap out of some Metal Slug. We still do that. Metal Slug is a great game. But as far as like Gears of War and Call of Duty and all that mess, I'm not interested. I don't like how realistic the damage systems are in those games. I like being able to be shot like, you know, 50 or 100 times and still have a like Quake 3 is the best shooter ever made still, in my opinion. But I haven't played very many first person shooters since then, so I'm certainly ignorant. But as far as my interest in games as art material, the image, I just like pixelation. I think it's pretty, outside of any nostalgic reference. There's a great Paul Klee painting. I think it's of, I can't remember if it's called the Iliad or if it's Odysseus, but it's this figure on a boat battling these two or three sea monsters on this gridded sort of gradiated ocean surface. And, you know, that's from like the 30s or 40s probably. So it's well before computing. But I like that for the same reasons that I like a really close-up image of a vase of flowers from the background of some game, because it's painterly in a really clunky way. And that imagery has, you can plug that stuff into an art historical context and put it in conversation with people like Magritte or Jasper Johns, or more obviously Roy Lichtenstein and Andy Warhol. And it can mean something more than where it comes from, which is totally what Lichtenstein and Warhol were about. But then there's that mechanical reference to painting, like just how the brain processes a painted image that's representational, which if you really take it apart, it's just like these blobs of color. But because of the way visual memory is actively integrated into, your seeing from moment to moment, the way you process a pixelated image is exactly the same as the way you process a painted image, in my opinion. So through the pixelated image, there's a reference to the digital age that we live in, but then there's an older cognitive process that is completely invested in how we see things when they're painted. So there's like the old, something new, and something borrowed because of all the pixelated stuff, and maybe something blue. I haven't done a blue painting in a while. So that's where the gaming comes from. It's not about nostalgia. There's someone actually approached me at Mike German and Chelsea Reffler's show at Beep Beep, and they were like, "You must play all these games." And I was like, "No." I mean, I'm sorry, dude. I don't play games. But it was great. It was just like this. I had a chance to clarify like why I do what I do, Because there's a lot of video game art that's basically glorified illustration, and that's not what I want to make. I want to make art. But it's not my job to determine if it is art. That's your job, America. That's on you. but my reasons for sticking with that imagery for 10 years now are hopefully a little more sophisticated than just liking Mario Brothers when I was 6. Although that's a legitimate reason.
Ashley Anderson, let everyone know how they can get in contact with you and find out more about your artwork.
How they can get in touch with me? Google me. I am all over the internet. I'm on Tumblr. I'm on Instagram now. I'm on Flickr. If you Google...
What are your handles on Instagram or Tumblr, all of that?
I guess the easiest ones are Instagram and Flickr. It's press start to begin. All one word, no spaces. It would be the same thing on Tumblr, but it was already taken. But if you find me on Flickr, there's links to all my other stuff in my profile. So, yeah. And I have a Facebook group, too. So, yeah.
Ashley Anderson, multidisciplinary artist and art monger. Thank you for your time.
Thank you all so much. And thanks, Wonderroot, for picking me for the CSA. I'm pumped.